Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Have you ever witnessed an audience member heckling a comedian?
And then this woman gets up from the front row. Two women get up. They were together. One just walks. She just starts walking out. The other starts yelling, "Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you," at me three times.
What should the comedian do?
At that point, you know, it's instinctual as a comic. It's like sort of a jungle instinct, almost like where it's time to fight.
But is fighting back always a good idea?
I'm trying to record this set. This is a big deal to me. I pay to have this produced every month, and it really matters to me that it's good and all this stuff. I'm trying to keep all this stuff in mind. I'm stressed out. And this woman is going to hijack my set over some shit she doesn't agree with?
Find out what happened next after John Caparulo was attacked by a Trump supporter. Stay close.
Hey, everybody, it's John Caparulo, and you are listening to Storyworthy. And remember, you can always suck my balls.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Calabasas, California. Calabasas, you guys, where the hell is that? Okay, think Malibu, right? North of Los Angeles, west, 101 freeway. Is anything ringing a bell? No? Let me tell you something. It is absolutely beautiful. And now that I'm recording, you know, all over the place and not just in the studio, I get to come to all these fabulous homes. And I'm in one today, so I'm super excited. Now, I am so glad you tuned in today. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with the amazing Sandra Tsing Lo. Sandra, honestly, is one of the smartest people I know. And her story, Back to Church, was really great. Super insightful. So if you haven't heard it, you're going to need to go back and listen to Sandra Tsing Lo. But today, you guys are really tuned into an interesting and topical subject with an amazing guy. I'm here with comedian John Caparulo. And John brings forth the topic, attacked by a Trump supporter. What is this, a tabloid heading? We've never had this kind of topic. So it does sound like a tabloid headline, but it happened. And that's the bottom line, and so it's a story. Now, I actually know when it went down because it was all over the internet and on TMZ, but I want John to tell the story. Obviously, that's why I'm here with him. But I have to say, this story reminds me a little bit of comedian Rich Scheidner, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and his story, The Heckler, right? Because it comes down to a comedian being heckled, and like I've said it before, you guys, why somebody thinks they're going to win against somebody in a spotlight with a microphone, I'll never understand that. Also, if you choose to go to a comedy club, I mean, you need to assume that things are going to be said that maybe you don't agree with, right? And then, of course, Trump is in office, and how can't comedians be talking about him, right? I mean, obviously, they're talking about him. But now, in this story, as you're going to hear, you know, this comedian got attacked, and I don't know if it's something about this administration or that's somehow making this kind of stuff more acceptable. I'm not sure, but I hope it's not a trend. Anyway, you guys, it's a pretty interesting story. I'm really glad you're tuned in. Hey, listen, you guys, now I've told you how I have my earbuds in, like, essentially all day, right? I mean, from the minute I drop my daughter off at school all the way through cooking dinner, yes, I cook. I'm always listening to something, and I love audiobooks. In fact, I just finished the Mr. Mercedes trilogy by Stephen King. Oh man, you guys, it was so good, so intense. And you guys can enjoy books in a whole new way. Listen anywhere, anytime with Audible. And you guys can try Audible for free by texting Audible to 28325. Again, text the word Audible to 28325, and you'll get a free audiobook. Now, Audible, as you guys know, is fantastic because you can listen to your books like wherever you are, right? So if you're in the car or you're shopping or at the gym, and you can even switch devices and you'll never lose your place. Plus, you guys, Audible carries titles in business, classics, erotica, sexuality, history, romance, mysteries, thrillers, self-development. You will definitely find a book that jumps out at you. And if it's a horror story you want like Stephen King, well, you'll be jumping too. And since I know how much you guys love to listen to podcasts, I know you're going to love audiobooks. You guys are going to love Audible. Before we get to John's story, I did want to remind you guys to follow me on Twitter at Storyworthy and Instagram as well. And why not head over to my website at storyworthypodcast.com and join my mailing list. I don't like to beg you guys. I really don't, but you know I will. So just join the mailing list and I'll drop it. Okay? All right. John Caparillo is here right now. He is a nationally touring comedian who has had a couple of comedy specials, including Meet Cap on Comedy Central and John Caparillo Come Inside Me on Netflix. Now, you may have seen him on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, Jimmy Kimmel Live, and he spent 6 years on Chelsea Lately. Right now, he co-hosts the podcast Domestic Disputes with his wife, Jamie. I believe they fight every week. I'm not positive, but it's Domestic Disputes. And he also has a popular monthly series called Caplets. And you can find it on his website, johncaparillo.com. And you can also find him on Twitter at John Caparillo. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for John Caparillo.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I can absolutely give you, I can vouch for Audible myself. And they don't even ask me to. I travel a lot. And I used to not read because... Who wants to do that? But now I have people read to me while I'm on planes, I'm driving a car. It's fantastic. I love it. Yep. So I'm all for it. So there's my endorsement. Anyway, if it matters to you. So the night in question. I like you said, I do my monthly series, Caplets, the concept behind it is every 30 days I do 5 to 7, 8 minutes of new material to put online. And it's essentially like taking the old concept of doing a comedy special and, you know, like if that's an album, then doing singles. You know, because the way the internet is, everything's so fast, people pick up on things so fast. It's too hard to, you know, sort of hide everything you're doing for that long. So I started doing Caplets every month, and it's been 3 years. And I was coming up on, it was either 35 or 36. We were down in Hermosa Beach. That's where we had shot every Caplet up until then. Starting with about Caplet number 9 or 10, I really was out of tricks. I like really had nothing left in my bag of jokes that like I could really go from. And I was really having to, I mean, people think I'm exaggerating, but I started writing my sets in the car, like on the way. Like I'm just lucky Hermosa Beach is about a 45-minute drive to an hour. So I would just figure out what I wanted to talk about on stage that night, and I'd kind of work it out on my wife, Jamie, who's not the greatest audience. She doesn't laugh as easily as others, so if something makes her laugh, you know, I usually, I'm like, that'll probably work. But if you're a comedian or if you know anything about it, it's very tough, you know, using... Like, not going from anything, like, that is, you know, memorized. Like, you know, it's like muscle memory sort of thing with comedians where, you know, we have, you know, you go up on stage and there's all these strangers looking at you and you have to make them laugh and, you know, you're talking about all this personal stuff and you usually have, you know, some stuff that you know works, you know, in order to get them going. Well, with Caplets... I was going out in front of people, or I've been going out in front of people with, you know, brand new stuff. I've never said this stuff before that set. And, I mean, it's just a lot of anxiety going in. And I have cameras rolling. Even more anxiety, because people are going to see this. And so I'm trying to keep all those thoughts in my head. And I'm always very anxiety-ridden when I go down and do those Caplets videos. And so that night, I was, I believe, 8th or 9th in a lineup of 11 comedians. And I was trying to keep my set in my head and, you know, trying to go over it, figure out what I want to do. And, you know, the joke, the infamous joke that set the Trump supporter off, I did write in the car. I made my wife laugh with that one, and I was like, that one's going in. So I had been getting wind from other comics who had gone on before me that night that there was a problem with this woman in the front row, and they couldn't really say specifically what the problem was. They just, you know, one comic in particular, I remember she was mad, like, because, you know, you know, like when people, you know, you talk about hecklers, when they mess up our set, you know, it sticks with us. Maybe they walk away and don't remember, you know, but it really matters to us because we put a lot of effort and a lot of work into it. This matters to us, you know, what we're doing. And you know, so when somebody messes up your set, it really bothers you. But so that woman was complaining. I saw another comic complain about this woman, and then Arsenio Hall actually went on a couple before me, and he actually did a joke that kind of bashed Trump. You know, he said, I was on, you know, I know him, and I won The Apprentice, and I'm scared. It was like, you know, I saw him on the TV monitor sort of deal with, you know, talking, like the person in the front row talking to him. But I didn't know there was any big problem. Then, like, the manager told me, you know, we think the woman in the front row kind of has a mental issue. We're not really sure. But I'm like, why is she still there at this point? You know, like, why aren't we getting rid of her? But they're just like, just handle it. So, okay, fine. And so that was really the furthest thing from my mind, though, by the time I got on stage, because I'm trying to keep all of these new jokes and stuff in my head so that I can deliver them right the way I wanted to. So I go on, and I'm maybe a couple minutes into my set at that point, and I told a joke, which was, you know, that it was about, because I had just gone to St. Louis the week before, and I was talking about how certain famous architectural structures don't really impress me the way they should. And, you know, like the St. Louis Arch, it's better than anybody else's arch, but that's about it. And then I said the Washington Monument, I said, you know, it's a big pencil. And I said, a lot of people think it looks like a dick, but I think they're reserving that design for Trump. And I mean, I knew that it would get it was just, you know, the whole room, you can just feel all that, like that explosion of energy where it's like, you know, the people who might be for him, you know, are still like, you got us on that one. And then the people who are, you know, who hate him, which are, you know, predominantly in L.A., you're going to find that, you know, more of a Democratic, you know, blue state sort of thing. So people were really cheering, you know, and stuff. And then this woman gets up from the front row. Two women get up. They were together. One just walks. She just starts walking out. The other starts yelling, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, at me three times before I finally responded. I went, I snapped back and went, no, fuck you, stupid. And So at that point, you know, it's instinctual as a comic. It's like, you know, like sort of a jungle instinct, almost like where it's time to fight. And, you know, when somebody comes at you and starts, and I was upset because, you know, I'm trying to record this set. This is a big deal to me. I pay to have this produced every month, and it really matters to me that it's good and all this stuff. I'm trying to keep all this stuff in mind. I'm stressed out. And this woman is going to hijack my set over some shit she doesn't agree with? Fucking kidding me? Like, really? Like, I mean, and she was probably 60. I mean, grow up. I mean, really, I couldn't believe it. And plus, I knew she had heard anti-Trump stuff before that. And that's why I said, when I was like, what? Am I the first person to come up with anti-Trump sentiment? Did I invent that? What, he was mom? And I just, like, so she's barking at me, like, you know, she's saying something about, you know, well, I'll leave. And I was like, good, go. And I wanted you there. I mean, and then she says, go fuck yourself. And I went, you know, and I said, go fuck myself. And I was about to say, yeah, I'll go fuck myself and you keep making America great again. And I'm mad that I didn't get that line out, because it was like, as soon as I was about to say that line, she throws a glass at me. And I mean, if you watch the tape, I just watched it. I just watched it hit me, which I guess I just trusted my belly to absorb the blow. But she threw the glass. I mean, it stung. It didn't shatter or anything like that. It didn't, you know, do any, I didn't have any broken skin. But it was really startling. It was humiliating. It was really, a lot of things. Just a really nasty thing for somebody to do. And I mean, I've been doing comedy now for 20 years. Never had that happen. And I, you know, my immediate reaction after she threw the glass, I mean, there's kind of a code in comedy where it's like, somebody, you know, if somebody shoots you with a gun, you come back with a cannon. That's how you maintain your dominance over this room. And so for a second there, she threw a glass at me. What do? I grabbed the stool that was next to me, because, you know, I was like, well, I'll make it like WWF, you know, wrestling or something. Like, I just, but, you know, I'm like, well, I'll do, and I mean, it's like a split second where I caught myself, and I'm like, I've never hit anybody in my life. I'm not doing that. Why would I ever do that? And I just, obviously, I put it down, and you know, I got back to the microphone, and people were yelling at that woman, you know, fuck you, fuck Trump, fuck it. And it got bedlam really fast. And it was like, man, this is going to go to hell quick. Like, I don't think that, I thought the show was going to come to a crashing halt as this woman walked out. Like, it just, because there's just certain times when it just feels like there's no way we're going to get back to a comedy show. And that's when I, you know, I came in with, you know, I had my line that I said where, you know, it was like a family reunion and, you know, your uncle cusses out your grandma and there's one person who goes, who wants cake? And I was the who wants cake guy. And that's, you know, I've said that before in much less ugly circumstances, but that particular time was like, it really got the room back to a place where I was just proud of myself that I was able to power through. And I actually not only finished my set, kept the show going, but I really finished well. And I thought, wow, I just was able to overcome the worst of the worst. And I got it in HD. I'm like, that's fantastic. And I didn't think of it really as, you know, anything more than a Caplets episode that, you know, people would, you know, I get a lot more views than I usually do. But then when we were on the way home, it was like, you know what? Maybe this might have bigger ramifications. And then, you know, one thing led to another, and it's on TMZ a couple of days later. And, you know, I just was trying to turn negative into a positive, I guess. But I really, from an artistic standpoint, I was just proud of myself that I was able to not only persevere in that situation, but I got it. I got a video of it too, so it was cool. In that sense, it was ugly. It was horrible to go in the moment. I don't want to make it sound like it was too great. Like I wanted it to happen because there's been a lot of negativity from it too. But I felt like I made the best I could possibly make out of it.
You did. You handled the situation.
Yeah. Thanks.
So what happened to this lady? Now she's obviously got kicked out of that club, right?
She walked out of that club.
Right, but they're not going to let her back in.
I don't know.
And what about you?
reason I say that is because that's the first question people usually ask me about when I tell this story. And you would assume that woman got arrested, got apprehended, got some sort of punishment, and nothing happened to her. I just got asked by the management when I got off stage, do you want to press charges? And I went, I had adrenaline flowing and everything. I'm like, nah, I don't want to see her again, which I didn't. But it was like, they wanted, they just let her go because apparently I'm the law? I don't know. I mean, I thought that it was kind of... It was kind of their job as a comedy establishment to protect the rest of us.
Well, exactly.
Like
That's what I was thinking. Because if you watch the video on TMZ, if anybody just Googles TMZ John Caparulo, or it's on YouTube now, I'm sure, this lady was about 2 feet from you when she threw that glass.
Yeah.
So it wasn't across the room.
No.
And it hit you very hard.
It did. And I think it broke when it hit the table or something like it, but I don't know.
You dropped the microphone.
Did I? I don't.
Yeah,
I don't even
you
remember.
Did.
I mean,
everybody was
possible.
In shock.
Yeah. I've watched it maybe once, twice since it happened. So I don't like to watch me.
Well, it's pretty intense.
It was awful. Yeah, it was awful in the moment, yeah.
Yeah, and like you said, you were taping it and trying to make it... Well, now, like you said, you did kind of get something out of it. It's news.
Yeah. But, I've never wanted to be somebody who... I didn't want that to happen that night, and if I had it to do over again, I still would choose to not have that happen.
But, of course, you're not dropping that joke.
But, of course... Oh, gosh, no.
It's a great joke.
Well, the thing is...
It's a simple joke.
That joke was much... milder than the one I said after that. Because the one I said after that was about people compared Trump to Hitler, and I'm like, he doesn't speak German. And I mean, it was like, that was way worse than the one I said before. Trump probably wouldn't mind the one I said before.
No, it was mostly a visual joke, and that's why it's so funny, because everybody's picturing the monuments.
Yeah.
And you start with the St. Louis monuments, and then you move on, and it just kind of escalates. It's funny.
Yeah, that's it. It's just,
It sounds like she was waiting to get set off.
I think either that or I was the last straw, maybe. Like, because I know Arsenio made a Trump joke.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw him the other night, and he's like, isn't it crazy that, you and I was talking about Trump that night, and she didn't do anything. But it's like, I don't know if she was building to a point where she's like, that's it.
So was she drunk?
I would say so, but... A lot of people were drunk there, so...
Yeah, you were on 9th out of 11 is late.
Yeah. I mean, I always say, you can't, like Hank Hill said, you can't go blaming the beer. you can't blame the booze because everybody else had booze and they didn't throw anything. So I do think, yes, she had drinks.
But it was interesting when you said, like, if you get heckled, that you said, somebody shoots a gun and you come back with a cannon.
Cannon, yeah.
See, I've always heard that with comedians is that you don't... I'm not saying you did this that night, but I've always been told that you don't do that because you don't want to crush them. You want to meet them where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have somewhere to go. You have somewhere to escalate, as it were.
Well, I mean, if somebody's trying to upstage you...
Mm-hmm.
See, because there's different types of hecklers. There's
true.
The ones who think they're helping... There's the ones who were just annoying.
Or somebody trying to be funny, like in the back of the club, and they just shout out.
Yeah.
But this woman was so close to
you. This woman was trying to, she was trying to basically, make me look like the bad guy here or something. And so it was just, I'm not only going to squash you, I'm going to put you down through the earth. You know what I mean? Like, we're just like, boom, take that, what? And that's why, and the part I guess I left out was when I told the story originally was, as she walked out, right before, I should back up, right before she threw the glass at me, I was like, in the moment, the one thing I could think of was like, okay, because, it's such a split second thing. I'm like, look, I've got to make the rest of the crowd laugh. As well as sort of stand up for myself and for, I guess, really free speech in general.
Mm-hmm.
I said, hey, and on your way out, remember, you can always suck my balls. And that is where...
That's what tipped
That's it. Where she threw the glass at me. So I guess I should... I forgot. I guess I left that out when I was telling the story. But yeah.
Well, wait
That's
a second, but even, but,
but
even
still,
she was walking away, so then she turned around and came back.
Well, she was in the middle of barking at me, like, she said, because that's what made her say, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Was I said, remember, on your way out, You can always go. Yeah. You can always suck my balls.
Yeah, and so that was almost too clever for her. You know, comedians are words, or the words you're using. Sure. That's your power.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she obviously felt backed into a corner because you won.
Yeah. Well, everyone blew up at that point where everybody was like, "Oh yeah," like it's like, you know, a rap battle or something. Like, sure. "Oh, you got."
Fucking A, man. Listen, I one time talked with Frazier Smith, and he was the host on stage after Michael Richards at the Laugh Factory told off those guys in the loft, right? So now Michael Richards, you know what went down, and he yells the N-word, and then he leaves the club, and Frazier Smith has to go on stage and get that back.
Yeah.
And then Frazier Smith was also hosting the night when Daniel Tosh said to that woman, again at the Laugh Factory, I hope a bunch of guys rape you or something. Remember that?
Right, right.
And Frazier Smith was on that night. So he's also experienced this, you know, thing where you got to get him back.
Yeah. And
who wants cake?
Right, exactly. And I've been through, I've used who wants cake in a lot of circumstances where there's just an ugly, you know, the comic before you bombs. Because like what happened with Michael Richards, I always say with people, that happens every night on some stage, somewhere, in a comedy club in L.A., New York, wherever. But it doesn't always happen to Kramer from Seinfeld.
Right.
That's what made it such a big deal. And the thing was with him was, you know, I had worked with him, like, you know, going up at the Comedy Store after him, before him, whatever. And, you know, he was a guy that was like mega, mega famous and then trying to become a good comic from scratch after you're mega famous. You're where we're all trying to get. And
he wasn't a stand-up comedian.
Right. He did comedy before that, you know, people just don't know about it because he just never really made much of a
success.
You know,
there,
right. He just more of a success as an actor. And when your lights are too bright, you can't try to become a good comic with that bright a light on you. You have to come out of nowhere, you know, and build yourself as a comic from being nobody. Because if you're already somebody, that it's impossible.
So you think he could ever go on stage again?
Michael Richards?
Yeah.
Not with his skill set, no.
Isn't that interesting? It's honest that you say that, though, because it is a skill set.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if he was able to... Because there are some comics who have caused controversy, a lot of them, who have caused controversy, especially with the internet. People get accused of this, that, and the other. And because they're really funny and they're really skilled at this, they can go up and take that and just deflect it and go, yeah, here's, you know, so here's what happened to me. So what? And, you know, and turn it into a, you know, into a joke.
Pivot,
And people are, you know, because if you get people to laugh with you, they'll forget about it. They'll go with you. The problem is Michael Richards, he's just, you know, and I'm not trying to beat up on him. Well, he has enough money, he can. But, you know, he's a guy that, like, his comedy isn't, stand-up-wise, strong enough to overcome all that.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I believe that. I mean, Daniel Tosh is a different situation.
Right.
I mean, he insults all the time.
Yeah.
And when you go to his show, you should expect to be offended.
Yeah,
because that's what he does.
Exactly.
Right. Because he's really aiming for probably 19 to 22-year-old boys. I mean, it's a different...
And they don't... Yeah, they're not the ones who were offended.
Right.
So
they need shock value.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting.
And I think what you were saying earlier about the... you know, the Trump administration and the belligerence with people, you know, I think it's, unfortunately, I don't think it's just, I think Trump has made it more acceptable, but it's been building for a while.
Yeah.
Even through Obama's administration, I saw one night, you know, in particular, like there was a comic who I really, you know, I have a lot of respect for. I think he's great. His name's Neil Brennan. He was co-writer of co-creator of Chappelle's Show, and he had a bit that involved him using the N-word. And, you know, that's one that you have to be really skilled as a white comedian to be able to use. And he had written this bit, and I'd seen him do it, several nights before that. And it was just brilliant.
I mean, really?
It was so good.
Wow.
And it was because, and because he had that little bit of, leeway, because people knew that he was co-creator of Chappelle's Show,
yeah,
which gave him a little bit of, okay, let's see where you're going with this.
Mm-hmm.
And they let him go with it, and where he went with it was just unbelievably
hilarious. Where? Can you just sum it up where he went?
I wouldn't do it justice. Go.
Okay,
he has
I'll
a special with,
yeah,
it, with it on it. And I don't want to do his bit, and I don't want to mess up his bit for him. But I just remember it started off with him. He was talking about, like, he was listening to headphones, and he was rapping along with Biggie Smalls, it's like, if you don't know, now you know. And he says the word,
mm-hmm,
and the first time he says the word in that bit, this one night when I'm waiting to go after him, this black woman in the back just shuts him down, just goes, no. And everybody else is like, hey, let him, you know, other black people in the room are, hey, just let him go. You know, he's an artist. Let's see where this artist takes us. If it's no good, we'll boo him off stage, but let's see where he's going. She was, no, you said that word, no. And I hated it so much that he stopped. He threw it out and started doing another bit. That
wow.
night, he said he was basically backed off his own
That's
art.
Too bad.
And it really is a scary thing. Even though we know that, like, yeah, that's an ugly word, and we don't want people going around just throwing that. That's obviously it. But when an artist, you know, there's freedom of speech, and when you have to give an artist, you know, their chance to create art.
Well, the concern could also be, though, because everything is taped, everything is going to be on the internet within seconds if people want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Maybe people have that in the back of their minds. I mean, they're not going to take the chances.
Yeah. I mean, that's scary, though.
Okay. Do you think
that scary?
You think that's because of the Trump administration, or do you think that's been coming
it's
anywhere?
It's been coming.
Because you tour nationally and you're out in the country. I'm like in a bubble. I stay in LA.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't see this Trump thing coming a million miles away. I didn't see it coming.
I was the same way with Bush in 2004.
Yeah.
I was like, I thought Nader would get more votes than Bush. Like, because I was in this liberal bubble here. And I wasn't touring yet.
You mean in 2000?
2004.
Oh, no, 2004.
2000, I had just moved to Los Angeles.
I see.
So it was feasible. If you look back at my old comedy, my sets from like my first special or whatever, I was always very anti-politics and didn't apply to me, so mm-hmm, I didn't care and blah, blah, blah. And I've become more politically conscious in later years.
People can't avoid it. How could you be
especially
a comedian,
now? Yeah,
you can't avoid it.
I'm not doing my job as a comic if I'm not talking about this, because it's on everybody's mind right now.
Right,
that's the other reason why it's so crazy.
This lady lost it at the Magic Club, and also, like you said, it is a little odd that it happened in Hermosa Beach. I wouldn't have seen that coming.
Yeah, if you know anything about me and my comedy, look, I don't know why anybody would support Trump. I don't know why anybody would support Hillary. Okay, I can see maybe 51-49. Like, you go, well, Hillary's more of the same, whereas Trump is like, it's gonna get even worse. But I have a problem with the system.
Yeah, but
not
you
so
look
much
at somebody
just individuals.
Who's served her whole life in public policy and she knows what she's doing, opposed to a reality star. It just didn't even add up.
She's got a lot of dark things in her past.
Look, John, you tried to stay out of politics and it didn't work. You're in it.
I'm in it. I mean, I am a big history buff. I entered the rabbit hole through the JFK assassination,
yeah,
being kind of a into that, buff. And then I started really looking at a lot of these things, politics, politicians, and boy, we're...
It's dark stuff, yeah.
These are gangsters in suits.
Goddamn.
We're really... I don't know what we do, you know?
Oh, look at that, folks. On that note, we got to wrap it up. Thank you so much, though, for coming and telling your story, because it's important, and folks can go on the internet, of course, and see what happened. John Caparulo and the crazy Trump supporter. I mean, that's all you have to...
Yeah.
JohnCaparulo.com. You got it on there?
Yes, yes. It's on JohnCaparulo.com. I'm doing an animated project now called Cartoon Comic. I'm using that as part of the press packet, actually.
Fantastic.
So it's, you know, there's a lot of other comedy besides my Trump joke. That's what people gave me a lot of flack for. They're like, oh, you're bigger than that, John. You're making dick jokes about Trump. And I'm like, first of all, no, I'm not bigger than that.
Yeah.
Second of all, I told 11 minutes worth of jokes that night. That was one joke.
I know, and it was so off the cuff. It was really very nothing.
I still do a lot of other stuff, you know.
This about too
my wife, child.
Shall pass. This too shall pass.
I hope so.
All right, you guys, so. I got to wrap it up. I want to thank everybody so much for tuning in today. If you liked John's story, and I know you did, go on over to Twitter and tweet John at John Caparulo and let him know that you liked his story. And then you can tweet me over there as well at Storyworthy. And remember, you can always email me at info@storyworthypodcast.com. I get back to everybody. That's the kind of person I am, John. Can you see it? Can you feel the love coming off
me? I do.
Me?
I do feel it.
All right. Join us next week.
It's there. Trust
That's
me.
Right. And join us next week on Storyworthy as author Madison Perry talks about being too old for backpacking.
So on our second night there, it's the half moon party. We wanted to, you know, do it right. So we took some acid.
Don't miss Madison Perry next week on Storyworthy. All right, you guys, I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and Jeffrey Glazer. And on behalf of our storyteller today, one more time for John Caparulo, my name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy week. The light force of the rear that you can
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
Barbarians, political breakdown, economic collapse, mass migration, pillaging, and plunder. The fall of the Roman Empire has been studied for years, but archaeology, genetics, climate science, forensic science, network models, and globalization studies have reshaped our understanding of one of the most important events in human history. I'm Patrick Wyman, the host of the Fall of Rome podcast, and I earned my PhD in history last year, specializing in exactly this topic. With this show, I'm bringing you the very cutting edge of history, the most recent developments in a rapidly evolving field. Forget the old story of straightforward decline and fall powered by rapacious barbarians and decadent Romans that you may have heard in a high school or college classroom. The end of the Roman Empire was a long series of processes. Yes, barbarians like Attila the Hun played their role, and we'll talk about them for sure. But there was also the collapse of trade networks and monetary systems, the decay of infrastructure, and the end of a common Roman culture and Latin language. We'll look at these things as ordinary people might have experienced them, not just through the dusty pages of faded manuscripts. Follow along with me as we explore these and other topics, looking at the fall of Rome not just as the end of an empire, but as the transformation of a whole way of life. Check out The Fall of Rome, available on iTunes, Stitcher, the Wondery app, and everywhere else you get your podcasts.